Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good morning. You are listening to Q Talk Radio. Q Talk Radio is an LGBTQ talk radio station. We are also the creators of the LGBT Hero Awards. On today's episode, Raising Zoe 2, we'll be talking to director Dante Alencastre. Dante Alencastre is the director of the award-winning and critically acclaimed Transvisible, Bambi Salcedo's story, and he is nearing the completion of Raising Zoe, another excellent documentary, and he needs your support to tell this young but powerful story. Please help me welcome Dante Alencastre to the show. Good morning, Dante. How are you?
Good morning, Xavier. Good morning, listeners.
Welcome to the show. You've been on the show two times before, talking about some of your projects. I know you're really busy, so thank you for taking the time this morning to call in so early. How are you doing?
Well, as you just mentioned, I've been very busy, excited, and stressed out because I'm finishing the final edit of the film. I'm laying music. I'm laying animation. It's just, this is the busiest time for me. I mean, just to be able to finish the film and making it right and making everybody happy, including Ophelia, Zoe, Letty, and of course the people that have put their trust in me and you like a supporter and the community as a whole.
Absolutely. I can't imagine the level of a busy schedule that you're having to deal with. I'll share with listeners that Raising Zoe is a documentary that depicts an eventful year in the life of transgender 13-year-old Zoe Luna, her mom, Ophelia, and her older sister, Letty. So let's talk a little bit about what that 1 year is about, because to update listeners, Zoe is about to be 15, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. She's getting ready for her quinceañera next month. But like you said before, my film is about a period in her life where a lot of things were changing, and I was lucky and privileged enough to gain access to their family and to their pictures and to their appointments and to their events. So I basically documented the year that started with her 13th birthday until her 14th birthday. In that year, she went through medical transition. She also went through some wonderful events that put her on the map, like she was on another documentary produced by Laverne Cox on MTV called The T Word. She also finally got the guidelines in her middle school changed, because one of the things you'll see in the film is that when she was in middle school, the school district tried to expel her because she was basically talking about her truth, telling her peers that she was a transgender girl and that she was going to live her life as a girl. And the school district took offense to that and started bullying her, discriminating. And it wasn't only her peers, but the school themselves were trying to get rid of Zoe from the school. And that's when Ophelia, her mom, with the aid of the ACLU, stood up to them and told them that what they were doing was discriminating against her daughter. And she actually stayed in that school and graduated with honors. And she's finishing now her freshman year in a high school.
As much as I know this story, because, I know Ophelia and Zoe, and they also contribute to our radio station, I got goosebumps just rehearing this story. And like you said, Zoe, with the help of her mom and the ACLU, fought school officials to have the right to self-identify at school. So you we see this in the film. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, we see the retelling of it. We have James talking about where he was contacted by Ophelia, and we also listen to Ophelia, Letty, and Zoe to retell what happened, because this happened before I started filming. So I think it was a year and a half before we actually started shooting. So they're basically retelling what happened to them, because I think it's a really good thing for people, to parents, to see that, you know, you can do something about, you know, your kids' rights. And you can also educate the educators, because as James points out in the film, that the educators knew that they were doing was discrimination, that they thought because Ophelia, single mom, you know, immigrant, whatever, they thought that they could bully her and get her kid out of the school because she didn't know her rights. And that's the other part of the message, is that you need to know your rights, you know. So, and for that reason, I'm also partnering up with other agencies, other organizations that deal with monolingual parents or Hispanic parents who don't know about what their rights are, especially when they have a LGBTQ kid in school that want to come out and want to express themselves as their authentic self, like as you mentioned.
You know, I'll let people know that you're an advocate of equal rights globally, and one of the things you work on is to bring awareness of Latino and trans people around the world through your films. We saw some of that in, you know, Bambi Salcedo's story, and then En El Fuego, which is a documentary that's based in Peru. We see some of that as well. What ignites this passion of storytelling for you? Why are these stories important to you?
Well, like you said, it really began 9 years ago when I went to Lima, Peru, which is where I was born, and I met a group of trans activists, and they were so eager to tell me their story, and I didn't know really what I was doing. Basically, I've always had a camera. I had my little handy cam. I remember it was those pocket cameras, and I said, okay, well, sit down and tell me your story. And I felt that their story was something that hasn't been heard before, especially in the community down there. And when I brought it back to LA, there were people who were eager to listen to it, namely Outfest. I showed it to one of the programmers, and they said, oh, well, you better finish this film because we want to show it. And that was 9 years ago, 2007. By doing that, I think the community here in LA started coming around to watch my screening, listen to me in my Q&As. So they started inviting me to my first Transgender Day of Remembrance. And I was impacted, Xavier. It was like being in an epiphany when I saw these women, because at the time they were mostly trans women, talking about their experiences, which had a lot to do with my experience of coming out in Peru and other prejudices. But, of course, their experiences were more challenging. But I was really blessed to meet some of the people who spoke at that point, namely Valerie Spencer, and she became a very good friend of mine. And the reason I keep championing their rights is because they're not just subjects to me. They're my chosen family. They're my intentional family. And if something hurts them, it hurts me. And especially in terms of the youth, when I see youth being committing suicide or being murdered, it really, really rankles me. And I think I'm not doing it just as an activist. I'm doing it because it's happening to my family, to my chosen family.
And how did you learn about Zoe and Ophelia and the ACLU? Did you first read about the case? Did you meet them somewhere? And how did that relationship start?
Well, actually, that's a very funny anecdote. And it just tells you how the universe is always, conflating for you to create or to speak up or to stand up to somebody else's rights. So you mentioned my Bambi film, Transvisible,
That premiered at Outfest in 2013, and actually Bambi Salcedo brought Ophelia and Zoe to my screening. So that's where I got to meet them. But of course, as you imagine, in a premiere, I was like, hi, who are you? Oh, yeah. So we'll just leave. We left it at that. Then I got to see Ophelia and Zoe give the most riveting and emotional speech at the Transgender Day of Remembrance in 2013. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if I make a film about them? But I felt at the time that Zoe is just so young. I don't think I want to put it into the media glare that a documentary brings you. So I just left it, like in the back burner. I also was working on another documentary at the time. But when that documentary lost its funding, I think we met Ophelia and Zoe casually, and they invited me to their home. And the first thing I hear when I walk in the door is like, Dante, move out of there, jump out of the sofa. It's because their little Chihuahua dog is named Dante. And then I found out also that day that Zoe was having a birthday in July, and it happens to be the same day as my birthday, on the 23rd. So I said, I guess the universe is telling me that this is a story that I need to tell. And we got along so well, and I felt really close to Ophelia. She reminds me a lot of my mom. And the fact that Zoe and I, we share a birth sign, I can see a lot of myself in her, and hopefully she says that she sees a lot of things about her in me, so I hope she doesn't make the same mistake.
Well, I think that one of the things I can say that I experienced was that as Zoe and her mom, with the help of the ACLU, really fought the school, it seems like it also opened them up to a whole new support system and a new community, and to a degree has catapulted her to this place where she received a lot of attention. So that's how I met, Ophelia and Zoe. We were recipients of an award, individual awards that were part of the CSW Pride event. I don't remember if it was 2011 at this point or 2012. My memory's foggy, but that was my first encounter with them. And since then, I've seen them, take so much center stage so many times. So is that something that we'll get to see in the film? Will we see sort of the eruption of events take place in their life?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word that might be very suitable for this is blossom. I mean, you can see in actually physically how Zoe blossoms in the film, from the little girl that you met in, I think it was 2012, and I met in 2013. You see her blossom into the young woman that we know now, that be coming to the Q&A, into the premiere. But you can also see in her mind, I have early speeches of her as early as 2012, where you can see how even her delivery, her confidence has totally gained. I mean, I remember one of the speeches that I love is, like I mentioned, the Transgender Day of Remembrance speech, and she was giggling through it and she was nervous. And then you see something, for instance, that she did the year after, and she's totally confident and she knows what to say. She doesn't have to read a paper, and I think she's very good at the talking points. And the same thing with Ophelia, who's basically an accidental activist. I mean, she never set out to be an activist, but she has, as you know, she has the most beautiful way of putting her child's story and the way she advocates for her and other kids her age.
Yes, the fact that you just had to remind me that was accidental, that's so true, because in getting to know her, I should speak from a place of my own experience, but it's easy for me to forget that this isn't what she meant or set herself out to be, that really it comes from a place of love and support for her own child that she finds herself advocating for, trans youth particularly, because that's who her daughter is. And Zoe, goodness, and I see them, they're definitely, a typical mother-daughter relationship in terms of, you see the mom role having to assert herself sometimes, and then Zoe just being a really young person. And the interesting thing about, I believe that, that I've heard time and time again is she has so much light that she draws so many people, but she's also very down to earth and funny, and she's very funny and witty. So
yeah,
she
is. Yeah, definitely.
I know that part of the reason that I wanted to speak to you and have you back on is to talk about what it takes to complete this film. I know that funding any film, big or small, requires effort, and I want listeners to get to know how they get to participate in the completion of your film.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I'm actually, this, since I have only a month to turn in the film to the film festival, I'm realizing how much it takes to even make a short or a documentary or a feature film. It takes a lot of help from the community, from fellow artists, my editor, I give my hats off to him, my producer, the people that are giving me their music. And I think the support that I already gotten for the community, sometimes is not enough to compensate the artists that are working for me. So I have, for instance, tonight I have a fundraiser at the executive producer's house, who, not for this film, but for Bambi's film, Rolla Palencia. And we're expecting 50 people to show up. They're mostly friends of mine, friends of Zoe, friends of Ophelia. And there's also still a GoFundMe campaign that is going on. We're about to reach our goal. We have like maybe $1,500 left into that campaign. And what it's going to do, that is going to take care of the deferred cost to the artist. So my editor has been working with me, well, not every day because he has to make a living, but he's been with me since October. Any other editor, as professional as he is, would have left me and say, sorry, Dante, I can't, I have to pay my rent. I have to, take care of my family. So I really take my hat off to him. My producer, John Johnson, who still hasn't been compensated besides some gas money that I give him sometime. We have a sound engineer, colorist, and some graphics that need to happen, web designer, and they all need to get paid at some point. And we're hoping that we'll raise enough money to at least give him a nominal fee.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a complex process. And, as much as this is probably, a labor of love, it requires money to be able to, connect all these moving parts. And so I want to make sure to put out there that we have included the GoFundMe link to this episode description. And it's GoFundMe.com/RaisingZoe1. The number one at the end, not spelled out, but the number one at the end. So GoFundMe.com/RaisingZoe, the number one. As we get ready to wrap up here, I want to ask you a question and see if you would be open to sharing with us a story that I heard about you growing up. It has to do with Sarah. Would you be up for sharing with our listeners your story with
Sarah? It's not true.
Sarah? It's all made up?
Yeah, it's all made up. No. Oh, you mean about my little teddy bear?
Yes, I would love to share that story with our audience if you're up for it.
Yes, of course. Well, when I was 4 years old, my mom got me a teddy bear, you know, a teddy bear who's male, you know, had a little bow tie and a hat and a little vest. And as soon as I saw the teddy bear, I stripped him of his clothes, and I went to my mom. At the time, she had her, she had a woman that made her clothes, and I just borrowed some of her, you know, pieces of cloth, and I made a little sarong for my bear, and I named her Sarah. So the next time I went with my mom to the lady who made her clothes, she said, she took pity on me, and she said, "Would you like me to make a little dress for your teddy bear?" And I said, "Yes," and I was so happy, and she made me. She showed me all the little pieces of cloth that I could use and material, and she did that. And she was my friend. My teddy bear was with me till I moved to the States, which was like when I was 13. But
wow.
She was always my pride and joy. And nobody ever said anything about it. My mom was just like, just looking at me, and I said, "Well, you know, that's your teddy bear, you know." So,
I changed my
teddy bear's gender.
So your mom was a supporter, and this person, what do you think, the person that was making clothes for your mom and your family, what do you think she saw in that moment? What do you think inspired her to ask the question?
Well, I guess I was embarrassed to show my bear, and I don't know how she saw her or knew about her. Maybe my mom told her. But I don't know. I guess if she thought that my mom was okay with it, that she would be okay with that. But there was not anything at that point anyway. I was, like I said, 4 and 5. There was no any kind of shaming or anything like that. I was just embarrassed because I didn't want to ask people for favors. But after she made the first one, I will ask her every once in a while to make another one, you know. So she was always dressed up to the nines.
What do you think that taught you?
Well, at the time, I lived in a house full of women. So me acting out a little bit girly did not make much of a difference because, you know, I was just with all my aunts. I think when... later on, when my uncle came, actually he had been in the States and came to live with us, he's the one that rose this, you know, kind of like red flag, you know, "Oh, my nephew's playing with a teddy bear and he has his little paper dolls, and what's next? He's going to ask for Barbie dolls," which I never did, actually. I did dress up for a little bit, but I think the element of, you know, the patriarchy or machismo that came into the household changed the whole dynamics of that household when he came in. And you know, and that's when I started feeling shame and much more an embarrassment. I just want to keep my toys to myself and, you know, not include the rest of the family and all of that. So, but before that, I was just like a really happy kid because I was able to play with my friends outdoors like any kid does and play with my dolls inside. And that's it, you know.
Well, for that same reason, I really champion your efforts. I think that as someone that experienced this coming to the U.S., coming to the States at an age that, you know, we all require positive reinforcement, but, you know, when you're a child, when you're under someone's care, you know, to hear messages that may not be of support can be very life-changing. And so... I really thank you for helping tell the so many stories that you have. And if there's anything that we can do here at the station to be of support, please let us know. My hat goes off to you. I want to once again thank you for coming onto the show. And, you know, I'll be at the fundraiser tonight, so I look forward to connecting.
Oh, thank you. Thank you to all the listeners, and please be yourself and be safe out there.
Thank you, Dante. I wish you a good afternoon, and I'll see you later on.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
You were just listening to my interview with Dante Alecastre. Dante Alecastre is also the director of award-winning and critically acclaimed Bambi Salcedo's story. For more information on Raising Zoe, you can also visit their Facebook page, facebookpage.com/ Raising Zoe. You can also find them on Twitter under Raising Zoe. Affecting the lives of countless kids, teenagers, and even adults, 13-year-old Zoe wants nothing more than to simply go to school, learn, have fun with friends, and be a kid. Unfortunately, ignorance and intolerance have not always made it easy. Zoe, with the help of her mother, the ACLU, fought school officials for her right to self-identify in school, even in the face of bullying and endless teasing from both school officials and students. Zoe determinedly continues to live her life as she is and tells her story in the hopes of helping others persevere in living their authentic lives. Raising Zoe. You have been listening to Q Talk Radio. Q Talk Radio is an LGBTQ talk radio station. For more information on this episode and past episodes, please visit qtalkradio.com. I've been your host, Xavier Mejia, and we wish you a great day. Thank you.